Well, the last few weeks, let me try to get your attention back. The last few weeks, we've been in a message series that we're calling Road Trip. Boy, you guys just want to keep talking about cars, which is cool. See this car up on the screen? I saw this car in Pleasant Hill just a few days ago. This exact same red, I mean, it was just this red convertible going the opposite way from me in kind of the Coles area of whatever that street alongside there. And I almost, all I had to do was make, you know, an illegal U-turn there and here, and I could have like caught up with these, but then I started playing the whole conversation through my head. Hey, pull over. And then if he did and I didn't freak him out, I'm a pastor at a church and I'm doing a message series, and it's like your car is the exact car I've been using as the emblem for the series to talk about how cool it would have been to go on a road trip with Jesus. And if he was around these days, that's the kind of, that would be his preferred form of travel, just like you, man. And you want to come to church someday. Can I get a picture with, you know? And the whole time I was playing that, yeah, that's not worth it. I'm just going to, you know, just keep going and enjoy that I saw that car local. Yeah, well, I mean, it would have been really cool. And I was thinking, but by the time all that happened, he was long gone and I was in traffic and couldn't pull it off. But the whole point of this series is, I hope you've seen in the last couple weeks, is to catch Jesus in action. He was constantly on the move, town to town, adventure to adventure. What would it have been like to be in his entourage and following him and seeing the effects that he was having on people everywhere he turned? What would it be like to have been one of those people whose life he touched in such an amazing way, or to have been one of their friends or relatives, and just the impact and ripple effect Jesus had on so many people in his travels. So we're on this amazing long, I told you to get cozy, we're going to go 10 weeks or so long road trip with Jesus in all these little adventures, and just you know, and as we've been seeing, there's so many of them. And they're so fascinating. What would it have been like to be with him, and how can that impact our life today? So let's jump right into our next episode. And we're zigging and we're zagging. This is not in any sort of order chronologically or geographically or any of that. This is just kind of grab, bag, go. And it was so funny this week how things sort of came together with me for this certain passage. But this is a fun one, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. But we're diving into chapter 17 of Luke's Gospel. Now on his way to Jerusalem. So once again, and we see that phrase so many times. Jesus was on his way. Jesus got up and went too. And here he's headed south, but he's traveling along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And it helps me, and I hope it helps you too, to pull out a map. I was in the AAA office earlier this week, and they still have tons of maps and stuff. It's like, who uses maps anymore? But I used to love maps, you know what I mean? And one of my first jobs when I got my license was a courier for the company my dad worked for. And so there was all the fold-out maps, you know, that were always, the hardest part was trying to just fold them back. But remember the Thomas Cook maps? You know, you'd get to the end of the, you got to flip your page. And sometimes it wasn't on the next page you had to go to. You know, it was like one of those adventure books, you know, you had to go to another page, you know, and it was all over the place. And love maps. And so where do we catch Jesus? So, you know, he started his ministry, grew up in Nazareth, which was just sort of a backwater town. Moved up to Capernaum, started his ministry around the Sea of Galilee, and then he's headed south to Jerusalem, trekking down here. And he's along the border of Galilee and Samaria. He's got to go through some rough country to get south into the Judean countryside where Jerusalem is. And you know how we hear different derogatory comments all through the New Testament about those Samaritans? You know, and the reason why the people in the southern part of the Jews here kind of had a little bit of a bad feeling, well, more than that, towards their northern neighbors, because they kind of felt that their ancestors, you know, kind of kept things pure in the south, whereas the northern ones kind of sold out and took on different customs and intermarried with different peoples, and so they just had a lot of tension. You know, it's the Samaritans didn't really keep their faith pure and really worship God in the right way as the Jews in the south had done over the centuries. And so there's bad blood between the south and the north in this area. So Jesus is serving the border here, where he gets into his next little adventure. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When Jesus saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." One little line. Weird. Why would he say that? "Go show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, As they went, they were cleansed. More to happen in this little story, but we got to get caught up with everything that's going on in just this short little paragraph, because there's a lot going on. Why they stood at a distance, why they yelled so loud, why Jesus pointed them towards the temple to go see the priests. Well, we got to flip back and look in our Old Testament. Now, I like to in a friendly way joke about the Old Testament that, you know, if you suffer from insomnia, you know, especially the book of Leviticus, you know, pop it open, you'll fall asleep within minutes. However, there's some chapters starting with Leviticus 13 you don't want to read before you go to bed. You might actually get some nightmares. Okay, so these are the gross chapters, and because this is what I love personally about the Bible and the Old Testament, it's real. It doesn't shy away from the grossness of real life. And when you're camping out in the wilderness with a few couple million people, you know, you got to have some regulations on dealing with things like infectious skin diseases, you know, and bodily fluids and all that. It's all in there. And in these, I call them the nurse chapters. It's like you got to be a nurse to be able to read these chapters, you know. It's like, ugh. Yeah, anyway, so I've tried to edit the really graphic parts here, we can get a feel of what's going on. But Leviticus 13 tells us anyone with such a defiling disease must wear torn clothes. This is how you have to act if you're infected with a skin disease like leprosy. Must wear torn clothes. Your hair's got to be all messed up. You can't do your hair nice. It's got to be, you know, Albert Einstein messy, you know, just like just bad hair day. Cover the lower part of your face and cry out, "Unclean, unclean." If anybody comes anywhere near you, you got to stay at a distance. And if you even see anybody, you got to say, "Beware, get out, get back, unclean, keep away." As long as they have the disease, they remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp, outside the village. They're in seclusion. They're in isolation. They're quarantined, so the infection doesn't spread. Remember the heartbreaking scenes in Ben-Hur, that classic Charlton Heston, where his mom and his sister, you know, are living among the lepers, you know, out away from the city. And how they can't let him get any, you know, they don't want him to get anywhere near them. They've got to cover themselves. and just how lonely and isolated and full of despair all these broken, hurting people were. And that's who Jesus stumbled upon in this little travelogue. These 10 men, and they were the only ones that they were each other's only friends. They couldn't be part of any other group, and they had to stay away. And when they saw Jesus, they knew they couldn't get close to that road that he was on where all the travelers were. But something about Jesus, maybe something that they had heard, something that they felt, they called out to him. But it wasn't unclean, unclean, stay away to him like everybody else needed to hear. They called, "Master, have pity on us." I'm not going to read you all of this. I mean, because there's so many little details. I just want you to have some level of appreciation of what people had to go through back in the day just to get back into fellowship. If for some reason they could eventually be healed, the priest is to go outside the camp, examine them. If they've been healed, somehow the priest shall order 2 live clean birds and some cedar with scarlet yarn and hyssop to be brought for the person to be cleansed. There's a cleansing ritual and a worship ritual and all these different rituals and steps in order for the person to get back into fellowship. And 7 times you shall sprinkle the one to be cleansed of the defiling disease and then pronounce them clean. After that, he's to release just sort of symbolically a live bird into the open fields. There's an element now of freedom. The person to be cleansed must wash their clothes, shave off all their hair, and bathe with water. Then they will be ceremonially clean. After this, they may come into the camp, but they must stay outside their tent for 7 days. And there's more little things that they had to follow, but I just wanted you to get that flavor of what was going on and why Jesus, the first thing he pointed them to, because they couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't have any possibility of reestablishment back home in their community unless they went through the priests and all these rituals and all this cleansing. And Jesus didn't want to. He cut right through the chase. I mean, there was no small talk or anything like that. He knew exactly what they needed and the direction to point them to get them on the straightest line back into life was go to those priests. We don't even need to talk. Just turn around, head to your closest local priest and get done. And it's like they listened to him, and as they were walking, they saw what was going on. That's why they were yelling. That's why Jesus pointed them in that direction with that command. He heard them. He felt them. And he healed them. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was, of all people, a Samaritan. What? Jesus asked, "Hey, you know, not necessarily a math guy, but weren't there 10? We're not all 10 cleansed. I kind of know, kind of been around this block, kind of know what I'm doing. It's not my first leprosy rodeo. Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except somebody that most people would assume wouldn't know better? Wouldn't have it in him? This foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." This incredible little story about healing, but then about sometimes how we can just move so fast through life that we forget who's caring for us. And we can take so many things for granted. So I've got a little history with this passage, and it has to do with cars specifically. And I never liked this car. Denise loved it, you know, and she was on this Trooper kit. Her sister had her doll friends. Everybody had a Trooper. And we had little babies, and our cars just weren't, you know, we needed more of a baby-friendly car. When I married that cute brunette, she had this killer black Wrangler convertible Jeep. I mean, it was pretty sweet. Then I had to, you know, and she had to get all domesticated, you know, when we started having babies, and that two-door thing wasn't going to work anymore. And so we were shopping around for something a little more practical. And, you know, we were like, roll on budgets and things like that. But we had been praying for a Trooper within a certain price range. So it had to be a certain older year, you know, with a bunch of miles on it. And stuff like that, and you know, been shopping around, and and looking in different ads. So this was pre-Craigslist, right? So I mean, this is actually looking in classifieds in that thing called the newspaper, right? And and calling, you know, and. You couldn't even see a picture of it, you know, it's like you had to go by the description and go to a lot or go to somebody's house and you know, all the work, but there was a specific, you know, year and price range and all that was in mind. But while this was going on, and you know, it's my post-seminary days, so I'm just fresh out of seminary, and I'm going through my, what they call the ordination trials, you know, all your tests as a young pastor too. You know, you got to pass written tests and oral exams, and they ask you questions. One of the things in your oral exam, you know, when you stand before the whole presbytery, you know, and they grill you on different theological questions, and you know what an Ebenezer is, or how about a fetter, you know, I wouldn't have passed that one. But they assign you a passage, you know, from the Bible, and you, in this situation, I got to pick one of the few, and I thought, oh, that 10 leper one sounds pretty interesting. I'll do that one. And so I've been, you know, kind of starting to get into that. But and we finally got this car that, you know, I've been praying about and just, you know, hoping that would all come together so I could kind of check that off the list. And so I'm like, okay, well, I can sink into this thing so I can be ready for this talk I've got to give and answer all these questions and all that kind of stuff that was going on. And so I'd gotten into this passage and I've been, you know, studying all this, you know, all the requirements, you know, all the things that lepers used to go through and all the history behind that, all the gross Leviticus stuff, you know, and you know, getting familiar with that so I could, you know, be able to get some context in my sermon that I was gonna give. And then all of a sudden, I got the passage, I'm kind of halfway through it. I remember that night, waking up in the middle of the night, oh my gosh, I'm a lousy, like, I'm one of the nine. I haven't ever thought to stop and thank God for, like, providing that perfect car that was so awesome for our family. That was just the perfect. I've been praying and asking and asking and waiting, and it came through, and I never said thanks. I'm no better than And then I started really sort of reflecting, and I'm all, you know, that is, this little story is kind of a reflection of my lame, busy, too fast to slow down and really realize where God is in my life. And I might scratch the surface with 10% in responding to what God provides for me. I'm just like the story. I'm like 10% said thank you. It's like I'm 90% I'm forgetting to even say thanks. And I started thinking about all the other things that God had been providing and blessing. It's like, am I really in tune with what God is doing in my life? And it started to become a little bit of a turnaround. But I just remember that passage opened up my eyes about how easy it is to just to forget or not even realize or not even be aware of all the ways that God works through and provides in our lives. And I wanted to do something different. I wanted to start becoming more aware. So I just want you to take a second, because what I want to ask you to do here in a minute is a challenge to really dig in. And what I wanted to do was flip the numbers a little bit, so that, because there's no way I'm ever going to get to 100%, but at least I can shoot for 90%, you know, to realize, you know, and to take time each day to thank God. What's so funny about this passage and this last week and the whole car thing, for the last several weeks, yeah, I've mentioned we've got a new driver in our family, and she's just been doing so great with, you know, she's got a little job that she's doing and she's wanting to contribute. And I said, okay, you know, well, she's been doing her permit thing and she's taking her test in a couple weeks. And so, okay, well, we'll start shopping around, look for something suitable, and, you know, and all her life, you know, since she was a little kid, you know, and our kids play that punch buggy game. You know what I'm talking about, when you see a VW bug, you know, and so you, I don't know, we did that when I was a kid. I don't know how it started, but and so always wanted a little punch buggy, and I'm all, well, I don't know, those things look like they're just a little too flimsy. I started reading up on them, great gas mileage, great safety rating. So I started taking it a little bit seriously, and again, praying about it. And she was all, Dad, whatever, it doesn't have to be. And I want to get my hopes up. I'm all, look, I got a little track record with God. You be patient, you pray, and He provides. It's crazy, but you just got to be patient, you know. And I, you know, did a lot of Craigslisting and driving and disappointment. Man, I drove all the way down to Mountain View last week, and the perfect car, her first choice was white. I know our family gets a lot of, like, you know, put a lot of stuff because we got those white cars, you know. But we've had other colored cars, as you can see in our history. Just we're kind of in a white thing now. I don't know why, but it's they're easier to keep clean. I could never keep that midnight blue clean. That was my first drive. I went to white after that. As soon as I'd wash and polish that thing, same thing with that dark green Trooper. You know, a little dust, right? You know, 5 minutes later, we'd get on, like, oh, man. And I remember a guy I worked with, you know, I was like complaining about that. He's like, you need, you know, he's like, see that white pickup? I haven't washed it, you know, in like a month. And it's like, what? How does that work? Anyway, so that's kind of why I went to white cars. Anyway, so it was either white or red. I'm like, well, which one? And she's like, well, if you can find a white one. And so, again, praying about it. It's going to have to be older, you know, it's going to be 10 years, it's going to have 100 something miles on it. Here's the budget, you know, it had to be under a certain amount, and crazy. And I said, look, I'm not going to mess it up this time. And I told you about how I went down to Mountain View and there was this perfectly, you know, cute little white bug. It was more than I wanted to pay. But, and the guy, the salesman opened the door and it was like, okay, there was a cigarette smoker right there. I drove all the way down to Mountain View. And so, you know, had to be patient. And so, a sweet little couple who had had, just like us, they had had their first baby and they needed more of a family car. So, this sporty little bug was up for sale in Fremont. And the price, you know, had more miles and older and all that, which was great. And because the price was more, well, in our range. And so anyway, got a happy, thankful teenager. But I said, you know, Zoe, we've got to really be thankful here. This is how God looks out for you when you trust Him and when you make Him a priority in your life. So let that be, you know, learn that lesson that I kind of learned in a kind of an embarrassing way, that God caught my attention. And, you know, always remember, let this be a milestone in your life. You know, this is what you had your heart set on, and you were patient, you know, prayed about it, and you wait and see what happens. But, you know, it's a nice little amazing story, and it's just funny how it all wrapped in this week with this passage for me. But that is my hope for myself, for all of us, that we would we would shoot for that 90%, because there's no way. You're going to get to heaven someday and you're going to go, I had no idea. There's never going to be, there's always going to be that elusive 10% that you're just never going to know. I mean, to be 100% aware of God's provision and care over your life, you've got no clue. All the behind-the-scenes stuff that He's constantly at work doing, protecting and blessing you, things that we just take for granted, things that we're moving way too fast in this life to ever fully, totally appreciate. And it's going to be such an amazing feeling in God's presence someday, looking back on our life and go, wow, you were really there for me. But how can we begin that now with grateful, thankful hearts? Well, that's what your little thank you card is for. You even found a church called us. Here's what I hope you do with this. I hope you take some time. I hope you keep it for a while. I hope maybe it even has enough room to be, you know, kind of an ongoing journal. But I hope you take some time today and this week to start writing down all the ways that God has blessed you, provided for you, health, jobs, relationships, peace, forgiveness, through unconditional love, friendships, through finances, through all the ways. And just start feeling that and expressing that and tracking it and becoming more aware of it. And getting in the habit of when something comes along or something that you've been praying for, it's more of a natural response to, you know, responding in gratefulness right there and then, become more aware of it and not just, you know, stay, you know, on whatever course you're at and be clueless as to what God has done for you. Those 9 guys were really excited, and I can't blame them, because I get that way. I know it. I know exactly what it is. It's the rarity in my life to catch myself and go, whoa, wait, I gotta go back. I gotta thank God. But I'm trying to do that better ever since that episode years ago in my life. But I still catch myself and I'm like, how did I not do that? Why am I still so self-centered? But maybe this is just a little reminder, you know, to become more and more aware of all that God has done and is doing in our lives. So I hope you make good use of this week. And our lives reflect more of a 90% gratefulness than that 10% that we see in that story. Let me say a little prayer, and then I want to invite you to the Lord's table to come and remember and feel His presence and His goodness, His grace in a special way. Lord Jesus, thank you. Thank you for this story. Thank you just for how cool you are. Just how you see a need, you answer it, and you do it in such a direct, clear manner. That's what those guys wanted to hear. It's like we could go to the priests and they trusted you. They started walking. They took you at your word. Lord, how can we take you at your word more in our lives? And then when we experience your blessing, to not just keep going in that direction, but to stop and thank you for what you've done. And so let us always reflect hearts of gratitude, because you are so good. And your mercies extend forever. And so, Lord, help us to slow down in our lives and really soak you up, feel you, and see you in so many places in our lives, that our faith can become even stronger as we follow you. Pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, as you today, I guess we've got we're gluten free only today, but every week at Neighborhood we share communion and we do it in your own timing. And so as we sing these next couple songs, whenever you feel led, and Some people take communion every week. Some people every once in a while. Some people, it's you know, their communion is just right there spiritually between you and God. It's up to you. It's you just throw that out as a free invitation. And so, our prayer team will be in the back of the room, and we would love to pray.